This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 223 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Summer!
Yes?
How are you, girl? I haven't seen you since... Well, I almost said I haven't seen you since last week. I have seen you, like, literally face-to-face in passing, but we didn't see each other last week when we did the show because it was remote. So, how you doing?
Doing okay, man. I'm getting ready for next week. Next week, we're going to have a holiday. Well, it's a three-day weekend, and I took the Thursday off, so I'm kind of excited to have a four-day weekend next week. So
that's very cool. What are you guys' plans? Are you going to go up north?
We shall see. I just know that I'm not going to work, and that's an amazing thing.
I can say probably, number one, I'll sleep in. Number two, I don't know. I mean, I would love to say I could go to, like, Starbucks or the library or something to get some work done and, like, get ahead with the show and other things. A number of years ago, I was studying, like, all the science in my pre-vet years. All the science. I tried going to the library. I tried going to Starbucks. There is no such thing as you don't go there to actually study for real. It's not possible. At Starbucks, it's too loud. Unless you're there in the middle of the day, maybe, but it never worked for me. It was a weekend. And the library, I mean, maybe it was the time of year, Summer. It was disgusting. I was in the little section where you just, you know, tables and chairs. Ugh. There was this dude next to me. I am not going to make the noise. I will save you, dear listener, because it disgusted me. I'm going to say it with a really bad Eastern accent. I'm very aural, because I don't want to say the other one and make you think, oh my gosh, you just said the O word. No, I did not. It's A-U-R-A-L. I'm very ear sensitive. Is that better? Whatever. Hearing sensitive. And or sound sensitive. And so when I hear things like people smacking or I don't even know, it just like, blah. And so I'm there trying to study all the science. And this guy, he was ill. And he shouldn't have probably been out. I mean, in public, fine. But like, he shouldn't have been sitting next to, in a public place, sitting like so close to people. He was like sneezing and coughing. And then he would like blow his nose or wipe his nose and do the whole, you know, like dragging his hand across. I was just like, I'm there studying all the science and he's there giving off all the snot. It was disgusting. I'm like, yuck. So all that to say, I don't have a lot of faith in quiet environments at a library. Like if to sit in a big old chair in a corner maybe and read, that's different. I needed a table because I was taking notes and studying and everything. So if I go somewhere, I need to have my laptop. So I don't know. Do you have any suggestions?
You can bring your laptop to my house.
Gotcha. Fair enough. We'll see. So I think we're ready to get to listener feedback for episode 307, which was?
The First Wife. No.
Sorry. No.
Print. No. Hang on. Creme de menthe.
Excuse me?
Creme de menthe.
Well, if you're going to say... Yeah, okay. This is a whole thing. I won't get back into it, but I will have a little update. I have to be transparent. I looked it up. And yes, it is French, and it's of French origin. Correct French pronunciation is creme de menthe, with a T, not a th. However, because French does not have that phoneme, th. However, it has been anglicized / Americanized, and so it is one of the acceptable English pronunciation is creme, I guess. Well, I can't help but do the h, but the creme, the American retroflexive R, creme de menthe, or maybe month. I don't know.
Can I just call it cream of mint? Mint cream?
Go with that. Mint cream. Say what you like. My first beef and my continued beef is not necessarily what's acceptable or not acceptable or anglicized or not anglicized. The thing that I stand by is that someone like Jamie Fraser, who is fluent in French, who spent time living and fighting in France, and you know he drank while he was there, and he worked in the alcohol business, granted it was wine and other spirits, with his uncle Jared in season 2, in book 2. This man, if any, out of any English speaker, fictional English speaker, this man, and he's a linguistic wunderkind, out of anyone to do that, I don't believe Jamie would do that. On to our listener feedback for episode 307, Crème de Menthe. First up, we hear from Amy D.
Hey, Ginger and Summer, it's Amy D with some feedback on Crème de Menthe. First of all, Fergus and young Ian. Oh my goodness, I love these two, and I love them even more when they're in scenes together. They are super cute, and they play so well off of one another. Well done, Cesar and John. My next point was, I found it funny that Claire felt like she needed to apologize to Jamie for all the chaos she'd created by coming back. I wanted to say, girlfriend, it's not your fault. All you did was defend yourself. Jamie's a seditionist and a smuggler. This is a mess of his own making. And you just got caught up in the middle of it. However, that particular scene did lead to Jamie's super romantic speech about how he would give up everything for the two of them to be together again. And of course, who doesn't love a super romantic Jamie speech? There wasn't as much emotion. There wasn't as much character interaction between Jamie and Claire. However, a lot of things happened, and it really does set up the rest of the season. And I thought it was an exciting episode.
And now, Andrea P.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. It's Andrea P. calling with my feedback. Happy Halloween. Guess what I'm going as this year? Adaptation Jamie. I think living in a brothel is cool, and lying to your family, it's no big thing. I can also leap small buildings in a single bound, and I'm only 45. Well, I'm hoping Claire and Jamie being together is going to bring Jamie back around to kind of more of the Jamie that we know and love. But I guess this episode was showing us that 20 years apart is going to make a big difference. Have to get used to knowing what's changed, what's stayed the same, I guess. They changed quite a bit with Mr. Willoughby as well. He's made out to me not such a, you know, dangerous type character, and the Campbells have really changed, so I'm wondering what kind of ride they're gonna take us on. It'll be very interesting. Looking forward to next week's big reveal, which I think will be crazy and awesome. This episode, not my favorite, to be honest. I don't even know if I'm gonna watch it again. Oh well. Looking forward to next week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Julie writes, I did not like this episode. You two are much more understanding and patient than I am. I was so disappointed when it ended, especially that I had to watch it with commercials. I felt that many scenes were a waste of time. I really did not want to know about the two Campbells, even though you wisely and rightly pointed out that they had to be introduced now so we are familiar with them later on. I wanted more time with the main characters, Ian Sr., Ian Jr., Claire, Jamie, Fergus, etc. I kept asking myself, how could things have gotten this bad after only one day? Was there the euphoria, the pure bliss of finding each other after all these years? 20 years! That's a long time to be over it after one day. The honeymoon was extraordinarily short this time around. Claire felt out of character to me all through the episode. She is strong, smart, caring, but has never been reckless, intransigent, unreasonable, or even mean. This was especially bad in the whole head injury storyline. I felt like it was one of the main focuses of this episode and will never see the sky again. People can fall, hit their head, and get a brain hemorrhage. If only it was that simple to address in real life. Someone hits their head, you drill a hole into their skull, and voila, they're cured. Who needs a clinical evaluation, an MRI, or a CT scan? You cannot tell if someone has a hemorrhage or what type of hemorrhage they have by just looking into their eyes, especially immediately after the injury. You may suspect it under certain circumstances, but no way to be sure. Not enough to drill a hole into their skull at random. Trepanations, drilling a hole in someone's head with a trephine, were performed by the Incas way back when and are still performed today. It is one of the ways to treat brain hemorrhages, but this whole scene is unnecessary. If someone gets a brain hemorrhage after hitting their head, it means that they had fractured their skull and tore an artery. Drilling a hole may decrease the pressure on the brain for a little bit, but what about re-bleeding? What about fracture fragments? What about recovery, residual brain damage, etc.? Ask any head trauma victim, it takes months to improve with specialized care. Doctors in the 1960s knew this. I am all about saving lives. However, one must always think about the chances of actual success before considering a therapeutic option, and she didn't. As a healthcare practitioner, you have an obligation to help the sick, but this is not a sufficient justification to do anything at any time, in ethical terms, to commit coercive therapeutic excesses or therapeutic obstinacy, i.e. treating a dead man with a gruesome procedure and have no plan about what to do next. Claire was a combat nurse. She knew all about triage. Work like crazy to save ones you can save, pray for the ones you can't save or don't have time to get to. I also thought it was weird for Claire to start making demands after being there for one day. Seriously, she materializes out of thin air after 20 years of absence. She is an uninvited guest, a welcome one, but still unannounced. Back one whole day, and she wants to move, set up a clinic, see patients. Wow. Being a doctor is part of who she is. But she was in Scotland for weeks, if not months, in 1968. She did not ask Roger permission to rent out the back room of the manse and see patients in Inverness. I just don't see to be able to recognize Claire in this episode. Thanks for your wonderful podcasts, and thanks for reading my rant. That's pretty awesome, Julie. So, you didn't tell us exactly, or if you have in the past, forgive us, we've forgotten. So it seems like you are a healthcare practitioner and you do have knowledge of this. So this is fascinating. We would love your contributions. We want your contributions all the time, but especially upon the medical one. So if you would stay with us for our Gems of Autumn read-along, since we've got Claire with us for the long haul, there are always opportunities to get straightened out or to get extra information about the medical side of things. So thank you again. Awesome. And now we hear from Eileen P.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Eileen P. from Melville, New York. Here is feedback for episode 307. Well, I understand some people are upset regarding changes from the book. I'm more of a go-with-the-flow lassie, so I wasn't really upset about it. I really don't think it matters that they changed the Campbells. I'm interested to see how this plays out. And yeah, the other wife line could have been omitted. But with it there, there is speculation and anticipation. And I can tell you this from experience. I have had people ask me, who is the other wife? These are non-book readers. So they're speculating who it could possibly be. And they're anticipating the next episode. And then there is young Ian. Now, did young Ian need to be deflowered by a whore? No, I love the way they did it on the show. It showed young Ian the romantic. He is the king of men in training. What's not to love? Well, that's all I've got for now. Bye.
And now Megan P.
Hi, this is Megan from Memphis, Tennessee. I first off want to say that this is my least favorite episode of the season so far, but I've had those moments in previous seasons, so I'm still moving forward. I do want to say that I don't understand the need to change so much of the storyline this episode, because as a writer, Diana Gabaldon is so vivid in her storytelling. I mean, it's really, she's good at it, right? So why would you mess with a good thing and just kind of throw all this awesome storyline out only to replace it with such basic, not even all that imaginative to put in its place. So that's probably my biggest pet peeve about the episode, is just they had perfectly good foundation that had already been laid and they decided to rip it up and relay more foundation. That's honestly a little rickety if you ask me, but, you know, that's just my two cents.
Part of me hated the fighting with Jamie and Claire because, yeah, it was a little petty and it was very unlike them. But then I think about the almost 11 years I've been with my husband and times where we have thought about something, but there was kind of a deeper seated issue that we were skirting around by fighting about nonsensical, ignorant things instead. So in a way, it is kind of realistic because there's so many things that have happened and there's so much tension and the things that they have still left unsaid. It made sense in a way as well, but hopefully next episode will be better. Maybe they'll stick a little bit more to how that whole debacle goes down. And it just seems like it's going by so fast, and I'm very trepidatious about the future and what they might cut out, because I so enjoyed this book. I so enjoyed the voyage. It was so fun and different and fresh, and that's what I love about it. It was just such a departure from, you know, what we had read in previous books, which is what's so great about the author, Diana herself, how she took us on those different journeys to those different places, Scotland, France.
This week's episode is brought to you by Brooklinen. You spend a third of your life in your sheets. With Brooklinen.com, you can get the high-quality sheets and bedding that you and your loved ones deserve without the needless luxury retail prices.
Brooklinen cuts out unnecessary markups, retail licensing fees, and manufacturing waste in order to offer high-end designs and exceptional savings across their collection.
And they feel like butter.
They are such nice sheets. And since we do spend so much time between the sheets,
I wish I was spending more time in my sheets.
Me too. Every morning when my alarm goes off, it's like, time to go. I'm like, no, I want to stay with Brooklinen.
Did you know that Brooklinen sheets were named the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping?
I did not. That's pretty huge. And one of the things that we love about it is that when we had an opportunity to select our sheets and duvet cover and a whole package, we loved the versatile colors and patterns, and you can mix and match so many of them, and you can complement. We promise you, even if it's just the pure white, which is what I did, they will complement any decor.
I love my Brooklinen sheets. Try these sheets, and I know you'll love them too.
Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
In fact, Brooklinen is so confident that you'll love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. There's no reason not to give these sheets a try for yourself or as a gift for this holiday season. Give the gift of luxury sheets.
The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen.com. Promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These are the best sheets ever.
Martina P. writes, another super fun live FB after show. I rewatched the episode since my Facebook comments, and it did not change my mind about annoying Claire. I really love Claire with all my heart, just not in this episode. She is in Jamie's life for less than 24 hours, and she has already taken over and is running the show. Her medical BS is getting a little old, says I, who is usually in total awe of kick-ass Claire and her abilities and knowledge. Jamie's facial expressions are just priceless, and I'm wondering what could possibly go through his mind. I actually had a pretty good thing going. I had my printing business and a little bootlegging on the side, and here I am getting bossed around by Sasnak to fetch things. I would rather be strutting down the Royal Mile to the Bee Gees and let God take this bloody criminal. I would not blame him for these thoughts. However, he is a better man and tells her he would give up everything to be together with her. And guess what? Claire has to run off and see another patient. We also get to see a darker and at times unfair Jamie. However, I don't mind imperfect Jamie one bit. It makes him more interesting, human, and relatable. Wee Ian and Fergus are just delightful, and I love the relationship they are building between these two. Besides the reveal of the second wife, I love the episode. It was fast-paced and never a dull moment. My non-book reader friends were totally shocked by the ending and are super mad at Jamie. They are texting me at all times of the day to reveal the name of the second wife. I never, ever give spoilers and get my little fix with their ignorance of the books. First wife episode, here we come, and it will be a doozy. Can't wait for this discussion. And now we hear from Sarah V.
Hello guys, this is Sarah from Chile, South America. I don't like that they have made so many changes. I understand that they need to cut some things, but still, there are things that don't make sense to me. First of all, I also felt that there was there was something fishy about Claire and Mr. Willoughby's reaction when she told Jamie that the excise man was dead. That was weird. Second, I'm not liking Mr. Willoughby at all. I understand that they don't want to make the character offensive, but he's so vanilla that it's boring. And third, I can't believe they revealed that Jamie has another wife. I mean, what? I love Voyager. It's my favorite book. But there were only two surprises, really shocking surprises, in that book. And one of them was when Jamie's second wife shows up. So I'm very disappointed about them spoiling it. Of course, what I'm not disappointed about is this podcast. I love you. You are doing a great job. See you. Bye.
And here's Suzanne.
Hi, Ginger. Hi, Summer. This is Suzanne from Maine. This is the first time I've called in, but I've been listening to your podcast since the beginning of last season, second season. So, and I love your podcast. Thanks, especially all your music comments. I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments. I'm a doctor, so I know you guys said if somebody's a doctor to call in. It is pretty easy to diagnose an epidural hematoma because you get a blown pupil on the side of the hematoma. So it, not only does she know where the bruise is because she can usually, you know, you can see where the person hits their head, but it's usually right above the ear, and so it's fairly common, you know, that's the common site, that's where the artery is that usually gets injured, and so that's where you would go in with the trephine, you know, and go and drill a hole. So yeah, she could diagnose it pretty easily without modern technology. The problem with the whole thing, and the problem I had with the whole thing, first of all, I don't know why they did it, because it sure wasn't in the book, and what the heck was she thinking, was, you know, once, if she did cure him and drain the hematoma, what was she going to do with him? You know, like, it would take weeks and weeks for him to get better. He definitely would have an infection, you know, so the whole thing would just be a nightmare. So I don't know what she was thinking, and it was just kind of ridiculous. My only other comment, I was listening to your podcast. The one-eyed guy doesn't die in the book. He survives, and actually he plays a whole pretty big role in the book. If you go back and look, he's on the boat. He's a shipmate, or whatever you call it, on the big boat that What's-His-Face is on. I don't want to say it because I don't want to, just in case, the boat that Claire ends up on, sort of by accident, that there's an illness. Anyway, he's on board that ship and gives away Jamie's identity. So if you go back and look at the book, you'll figure that out. So anyway, he doesn't die, and that's why they don't find his body, even though Ian does get him with the hot lead. So thank you so much for your podcast. I love listening to it. It's fun, and I'll continue to listen.
So, Summer, that was the feedback. I think it's time to talk about something new.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't know. You and I have a hot date tonight, so there's usually a reason for that. How is it a first? We do this kind of weekly.
We don't ever have a hot date, A. And B, I was alluding to First Wife.
Oh, that's funny. First Wife was written by new writer Joy Blake and director Jennifer Getzinger. Okay, so I gotta admit, the first time I saw it, I don't know if I looked away or just like fast. I don't know what I did, but I didn't notice the opening title, and I'm usually like obsessed with finding it or watching it. But I went back like the third time and saw that, oh, it's
Joan.
It's wee Joanie. It's wee Joanie.
She may be my favorite new character.
Oh, she shut the front door.
I think she just overtook Isabel's spot. I love Isabel, but wee Joanie's now my favorite.
We'll get to her because I have all the love for her. She's my favorite part of this episode. Okay, let's go. We are finally moving. Yes! But more about that at the end of the episode.
You know, I was really hoping for a nice palate cleanser after last week. Right?
That teaches you to wish.
I know. And I think it did. Did it cleanse your palate of the issues you had with
You mean the last one?
That other one? The episode that shall not be named? Because I don't want you to say it again.
Okay, before I watched it, Summer watched it first, and I knew she would because she doesn't wait. I texted Summer and I said, without getting into a discussion about it, because that's how I roll, obviously, the discusser, without getting into a discussion about it or spoiling our own conversation, was 308. Let me go look at my text. I'll find it.
I can tell you what you said.
Oh, tell me.
You said, will I be happier?
Poor November 1st Ginger. She was so, like, hopeful. Okay. And what did you, how did you answer?
I said yes and no.
Okay. So see, that was very, very, very like bland, right? Very, not obscure, very general. Will I be happier? Yes and no. Okay. I think that was a very fair answer and I agree with it. I did not hate the episode. I didn't even hate last week. So just, I don't think we got any criticism or feedback. We got a lot of people saying, I love 307. And we got a lot of people who agreed with us in that there were certain parts that were just not true to character. And Summer has been more critical than I, not like evil bad about it. No, just very authentic about it. And I have a hard time not being authentic. Even if there's something that I'm like, whoa, I will express surprise and I will... It's all honest. Don't get me wrong. It's all honest. But I am not going to say, holy kashmunkball. What the F was that? You know, I'm not going to do that because I may be shocked by a choice, but I do my best to let the story unfold, at least within one episode, at least, to see kind of where it's going to go. And usually up until 307, it's so sad. We're so sad. Up until 307, I have been, I don't want to say placated because it's not anyone's job to placate me.
Really? I thought it was my job. That's what you've been implying for the last 4 years.
I'm talking about like of the writers.
Oh.
It's not anyone in production's job to placate me or to satisfy Ginger of this podcast. However, they have been doing so up until, I mean, I always have questions. I always typically find things, that's interesting. And that might be a code word for, huh. However, 307 was the first time, and I think you could tell you it wasn't just us. There was a lot of, I won't say pushback. There was a lot of opinion on 307. But I did not hate the episode. I just didn't think some of the things that happened were true to character. There's storyline and adaptation that you do because it's not the books, and we get it. However, things that are not true to character stand out like a sore thumb. And make me, I almost said groan, not groan, but make me like, oh, you know, like, what? I don't know, some noise that comes out of me. So when Summer said yes and no, I thought, okay, actually, I was happy with that answer. Because if it were a no, like an unmitigated no, I would have been like, Summer, you might want to do the show alone this week. No, I'm just kidding.
She would never, ever say that.
Oh, I might, but I would be joking. No, of course I'm going to be talking about it. But no, I would just say when you said yes and no, because I know you to be very honest, it's much easier for you to at least express your disagreeing with something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm afraid of hurting people's feelings, because again, I don't think people in production listen to the show, and it's not because I don't think we have a decent show. I love our show and I love our community. You guys rock my world. We don't do this show for the four stars, right? We don't do this show for anyone in production. We do this show, again, I always say this, selfishly for us. That's how it started. Because if we don't enjoy it, it's not going to continue. That's just, let's be honest. We do it selfishly for us. But the reason we're able to continue that is because of you guys and the community that has joined us on all the social media places and in our group, etc. So I think I'm very naturally diplomatic. It's not hard for me to have an opinion. It's hard for me to express discontent sometimes. Summer's like, what?
That is a lie. It's not a lie.
I just said I have opinions. I'll express my opinion. It's not a contextual lie.
It is. It depends. Ginger.
I always will have an opinion about something. I may not feel comfortable sharing that opinion. Okay, so I haven't felt uncomfortable, so uncomfortable with having a certain opinion about an episode that I couldn't share it. And thus far, up till 307, my opinion was like, I may have said, oh, that was an interesting choice, or, oh, that didn't happen. Again, does it? It's separate. We know that. I know that. It's not the book. But still, we say, oi, you know, that was a, I don't know if I would have done that, but Summer talks about butterfly effect. We talk about the changes that were made that affect things later, and girlfriends and boyfriends, or people, because I know none of us are dating, that I know of, people, dear audience, dear listener, it will come up in this episode, I promise. And Summer may beat me to it, but I do have it in my notes. Shiz is going to go down in this episode too. Big effing time. I don't think it was, okay, I don't think 307 was a disaster. I don't. But compared, 308 compared to 307 had a lot more going for it, I think. And I will say again here what I don't think I said in our episode, but maybe I did. If I did, I'm repeating myself, but I'm going to say it anyway. 307 was written by a new writer, and I think that was not very nice to give a brand new writer that kind of episode. Do you agree, Summer?
I don't think there is an episode in this entire book or in any of the books that I would think it is more fair to give them. All of the episodes, because they're condensing a gigantic book down into 13 episodes?
Absolutely. But you get
important points that are like,
I agree with you. You're already setting yourself up, not for failure, but you're already making an impossible, task, which they've done a brilliant job with. We're still fans till we're fans forever. Okay. We're fans of the show. We're so happy our favorite series is into an adaptation. That does not change. But I think we have like the magic of Tony Graffia, the passion of Matt B. Roberts, to do these wonderful show episodes that people like iconic. The print shop is iconic. To get Culloden, that's now iconic because it doesn't exist in the book. So it couldn't have been iconic before. So there's so many things of every season, but especially up until the midpoint of season 3. Honestly, I don't think, and I understand seniority. And I think Tony told us in one of our interviews with her that, you know, that they, some episodes they get to do. They get to choose, or they're lucky enough to get to choose. Some are kind of, they end up with, and of course they're going to do their best. They're not going to do a crap job. And I don't think the writing, like how, like the talent was a crap job. It's not about a talent. It's about a choice. And I don't, the choices that were made in the adaptation for characters and storyline, I don't think it was fair. When they broke down the when they broke down the book and broke down the chapters and then said, okay, we're going to do this in these episodes. Here's the arc, etc. I don't think it was, I understand everybody probably wanted the print shop or, you know, Matt got the print shop. Whoever got the stuff that they wanted, maybe the new writer wanted 307. We don't know what happened in the writer room, in the writer's room. And that's okay. It just, to me, seemed unfair. It seemed incredibly unfair to have someone who's brand new to the show, at least to the show, write an episode or be responsible. I think that's it. It's not just the writing of it, but be responsible. Have their name on something that could be so divisive. I mean, I guess that's it. So basically, Summer said yes and no. And so I was like, that actually made me happy. I was very happy because if it was a complete yes, obviously I would have soared. If it were a complete no, I would have been like, ugh. But yes and no, I can deal with.
Yes and no is fair. When somebody asks me how something was, I rarely say that was the worst crock of I've ever seen. And I also rarely say that was the best thing I've ever seen in my life. No one has ever adapted anything more beautifully than that. The reason is because I don't like to set people up for disappointment one way or the other. I don't want the expectation because, you know, it's like when a movie comes out and then for weeks everyone says, this is the best movie. And I don't see movies in the theater very often. But when I do finally get around to seeing it, I'm like, meh, it was okay. I don't think it met up with the hype. You know, everyone else liked La La Land. I didn't love it.
I fell asleep. I watched it at home, but I fell asleep. And it doesn't mean it wasn't good. Maybe I chose a bad time to watch it.
I just think that people liked it too much and they talked about it so much that I expected way more from it. If I'd gone in there with no expectations, I might have loved it. But given the way that everyone talked it up, I walked away going, eh, it's okay. So I don't want anyone to have that experience because of something I tell them. So I will give an honest answer, but I'm also not going to, I'm not going to give you all the deets, you know?
Oh, I didn't, well, you know, I would have come over and found you and hurt your booty if you had spoiled it for me.
That was a very specific thing you were going to do.
Well, I almost said the A word. I don't want to curse or whatever. I'm saying is I knew you wouldn't spoil it. So that was not a question. I knew you would be fair and honest. So when I got a yes and a no, some people might go like, oh, that's a mix. That's kind of sad. No, I was like, I can deal with this. I was so happy. Yes, Summer, I was very happy with when you said yes and no. I've never been happier to hear a yes and no together. So now, actually, we promise we're getting to 308.
Are we? I'm concerned.
Look, we've had a week to digest fan response to 307, and you know we had to just get a little bit out. And by we, I mean me.
Clearly.
This episode opens with Jamie, Claire, and young Ian, who have arrived at Lallybroch. It seems to be, literally from the moment they arrive, Claire versus Jenny, the match of the year.
Even before they arrive, and not even about Jenny at this point, but Jamie looked rough. I mean, I know that they left in the middle of the night and the print shop had burned down and he probably was not at his tip-top best, but he had like the darkest circles under his eyes, or maybe it was leftover soot. I don't know. He looked rough.
Yeah. Now, Claire is trying so... I feel so bad for her. Most of his episode... Well, actually, all of his episode. Claire is trying so hard to be amenable with Jenny. There's only so much that she can say, of course. Jenny is just not giving her any credit. It's just not happening. We learn that Jenny and Ian's kids are grown, and some have kids of their own. And Jenny finally acknowledges her youngest of the group, young Ian. And then Ian, of course... Ian Sr. is there. Love. He's a man. He's one of my favorite characters too.
It felt like she acknowledged him as a way to further illustrate the fact that she was not having anything with Claire.
Everything was a way in this episode was almost a way to acknowledge she wasn't having anything with Claire.
I know, but I'm just saying that moment. Like, yes, she said, you know, I'm glad you're back, you stupid boy. I'm going to hit you in the face or hit you in the head, and then you're going to be in trouble. She did all of those things that her instincts as a mother were to do, but they seemed like in direct response to Claire trying to chat with her.
Young Ian, as do, well, many a 18th century youth stuck on a farm, doesn't want to be stuck on a farm. He wants to go out into the world and earn a wage. They're talking about, of course, their most recent experience and how they came to leave Edinburgh, and he mentions a fire, and Ian Sr. says, what fire? Okay, I'm going to say this right here. I think I said it in the book. It's not a problem. Going forward, dear listener, young Ian is young Ian. Ian is Ian Sr. I'm not going to type it out, which means I'm not going to write. I'm not going to say it. So when I say Ian, I mean the daddy. When I say young Ian, I mean the baby, the son. Well, actually, it is Jenny's baby. Ian says, what fire? Okay, did you notice that Jenny completely ignores the mention of a fire, which could have killed her son and her brother, and hones in on the criminal activity that was mentioned? She goes, you're working with criminals? Not, are you okay, son? Were you hurt?
Well,
Claire just looks on, extremely uncomfortable and observing this domestic.
You were saying about farm, nobody wanted to stay on a farm. Wasn't there a song right after the World War II? I think it was World War I or World War II. How do you keep them down on the farm once they've seen gay Paris?
Okay. How you gonna keep them down on the farm? I think. After they've seen Paris. Something like that. Yeah. We'll include it. I swear we've talked about this before and sung it before. But yeah, that's funny. That's a good point. Okay. Yeah, that's a very fitting song. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't even seen Paris. He's only seen Edinburgh. How you gonna keep him down on the farm after they've seen Edinburgh? Okay, that was really bad.
It's like you knew it was going to be bad, but you continued.
I just, the note, Edinburgh, the ending was fine. Well, not fine, but the ending was at least clear. The middle bit was... You could tell I wasn't prepared for that. So if it weren't for the fire, if I'm correct in surmising, Jamie and co would not be at Lallybroch.
Not if Jamie had anything. Oh, Jamie that's didn't true. Want to be at Lollybrock with the fire. That's he true. Was trying to take
so Jamie has out. Nothing to reply to regarding him associating or allowing his nephew to associate with criminals. And Jenny says, this is not... Oh, man, there's so much to say, so much to say. Okay, quote. So that's why you're home, Tail Dragon, and with a stray who's dropped back into our lives after 20 years as though nothing's changed, unquote. Summer, you want to go from here?
I have feelings.
Oh. Are you broken up yet?
Now, no. No, we break up a little later, Jenny and I. I feel like, and this is where my breakup stems from. I feel like there's a lot of Jenny claiming that she's upset because of what it did to her brother. But at the heart of this whole thing, she's butt hurt.
I was about to say she's butt hurt. Yeah.
She's butt hurt that Claire never contacted her.
She didn't get any letters.
Right. It's actually all about her. And again, it's like she kicks Ian out of the room after Ian's like, I was selling whiskey and I was amazing at it and I made all this money and Fergus said we could go into business together. And then, and, you know, this happened and Auntie Claire killed a guy and blah, blah, blah. And all that Jenny can do is, okay, you need to go outside and wait for your punishment. And he walks out of the room and she's like, you killed somebody in front of my kid? It was just like...
Exactly.
Like... No, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Like, I don't know.
Hey, there's so many feelings.
Yeah. Jamie says everything was fine in Edinburgh, Janet. Uh-oh, he broke out the Janet, so right? We know this is serious. Jamie is trying to protect Claire and is about to introduce the bit where she was a victim. I mean, thankfully, she's an alive victim, but she was almost a victim of a potential rape, let alone a homicide. And at that point, as Summer said, that's when young Ian mentions that Auntie Claire, about the guy who almost hurt his aunt, quote, killed him good, unquote. Jenny explodes. Young Ian's smile disappears, and he realizes, that may have been a bit too far. Jenny commands him to get outside. Young Ian huffs out, but doesn't try to talk back. He knows better. So alone, Jenny, who is already anti-Claire, wants to know if the allegations are true. Claire says, young Ian wasn't there when it happened. She explains that she was defending herself. Quote, but there's more to it than... And she was about to say, there's more to it than that. And Jenny interrupts her in a mocking, bitchy way. Quote, let's all gather around and have a good story. She's like, oh, well, there's more to it. Let's go listen. I mean, this is... I mean, Jenny has some zingers here. Not even zingers. Jenny has... Oy. Jenny's not a pretty picture in this episode. That's all.
She got.
Did you have anything to say about that?
She's got her ugly face on. Like, I don't know. I feel like instead of talking about that I would just like to say that there were many things that they adapted in this episode that actually worked for me.
Oh, well, and we'll get to them. No.
So as it sounds like I'm just complaining, I want to.
No. But Summer, it's okay that you're It's okay that you're complaining because complaining about Jenny is straight from the books. And that, I think the writing for that was excellent.
I don't believe in the books that Jenny came that hot out of the gate. So
I don't think so either.
That's why it was jarring for me. It was not the slow burn of hatred towards Jenny for the things that she does later in the episode. It was like instant, like, oh my God, I can't even be around this girl. She cannot like... Like, she can't be cool. Just be cool, Jenny.
Even if it came off stronger or more, came out of the gate much more quickly and much hotter than in the book, to me, the fact that we're complaining about Jenny is a good thing. It means the writer was effective. And the acting, of course, too. But the actors have to use what, for the most part, what they're given. But don't ever apologize for complaining because, especially in this part, in this case, Summer, you and me complaining about Jenny is not complaining about the show. It's complaining about the character, but not about how she's like maybe Uber Jenny, but Uber Book Jenny, but it's completely in line, maybe stronger, but it's completely in line. You had this reaction to Book Jenny, maybe not this strong early on, but you had this a gut reaction to Book Jenny. You guys broke up. So to me, this complaining is actually a positive thing because it means they're affecting us in a way that they meant to. So Jamie brings up, Jamie brings up the money he sends them each month and how Jenny doesn't seem to mind that. Jenny is pissed that he got young Ian mixed up in smuggling and says, you know, no, you could have taught him the printing trade. Now, this is where it gets a little weird, but still good. Jamie says he treated young Ian as if he were his own son. Ian gives him his belt and tells Jamie, okay, go thrash him then. Now, I don't disagree with the type of punishment that Jamie chose for young Ian as an alternative. It's a little funny that when Ian gave him the belt, Jamie hesitates and he's a bit uncomfortable. He looks at Claire. Now, I know we like to say that, at least in the books, Jamie is enlightened for his time. I'm surprised this was a suggestion and further that Ian approved of it. In the book, didn't they end up thrashing each other?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is not only... what did you think about the alternative?
I feel like it did not work. Obviously, it was a change. Yeah. And I understand why. I mean, I don't fully understand why. I feel like they were playing it... they were playing it like...
safe?
No. Well, A, I don't think it would have played well to have them thrashing each other.
That would have been almost comical. Yeah.
But also, to have him look meaningfully at Claire, who is probably the last person that he's thrashed with a belt. And we all know how that went over. He's not in any rush to go beat anybody else with a...
See, that's a good point. I didn't even think about him and Claire.
And, I mean, but Book Jamie, I believe he spanked Willie. Book Jamie did. And so Book Jamie was not above thrashing. But I also think that in the book, and this is probably one of the reasons they used when they made the decision to change it, that the last thrashing that he got from his father, he was too old. He thought he was too old for a thrashing. And it was, and, you know, it was, he found it really embarrassing that he was like, you know, just hit me. Let's just have a fight, you know, use fists. And he was like, no, you're going to act like a boy. You're going to be punished like a boy. So I think that in, as far as if they were using book instances, that maybe the character of Jamie in the series would have remembered that and been like, I don't want to be that. And I, you know, I don't want to put that on him. But I think honestly, they just didn't want to spank each other.
What about young Ian's alternative punishment? What is he actually doing? He's spreading out shiz over literally, is that shingles?
It looked like thatching, some sort of a thatch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like a roof thing. Yeah.
But then they kept saying it was like fuel. Didn't somebody say it was like fuel? Did I mishear that?
I don't know.
He was definitely spreading shit. I know that to be a fact.
I love seeing Not So Wee Janet. And I think that whiskers line went straight from the book.
It was.
It sounded like literally like hit this brain cell of mine that I'm like, oh, that sounds familiar. Jamie and Ian reconcile. And they both admit that they were wrong. Jamie about what he allowed. Well, there's more than one thing. But Jamie at his foundation admitted he was wrong for lying to Ian, which he was. He was wrong. Ian, for the thrashing being the best course?
Probably.
Back inside, all I wrote was, babies! We see some of Jenny's grandkids, Angus and Anthony. They were Maggies. That's where I got Maggie from. They were Maggies. Dude, Jenny does not, I swear, like in more than one scene, but especially in starting in this scene, Jenny does not want to make eye contact with Claire. This whole episode is like, has different people at different times avoiding eye contact. Did you notice that?
Mm.
Oh my gosh, everywhere. So Claire is looking straight at her. And Jenny is being a passive aggressive itchy bae. When Claire says it's hard to think of Maggie as old enough to have Burns, Jenny says, oh, well, that's what happens when 20 years go by.
Yeah, no, that was nothing, Ginger. When she walks away with the baby and says, I don't want to befuddle the bairn, bewilder the bairn with a strange face. I was like, damn.
So we see Jamie is, again, not so wee, and he doesn't recognize her, which, I mean, it's been 20 years. That's a long time. And he's got a wife and kids, too.
And they all apparently live in that house?
Oh my goodness. Well, Wee Jamie, yes, because he's the new Laird. But all of, I don't know about that. So Claire offers to help change a dirty nappy. And as Summer said, Jenny demurs, quote, didn't want to bewilder the Baron with a strange face. I mean, all of this is said with a smile. And what makes it even worse, she couches it as if it's for the sake of the Baron. For the sake of the Baron, you can. And the look on Claire's face is shocked. Now, also, if you look at her body language, her arms are crossed the entire time. So she's, you know, in a protective way, right? She's protecting herself. Then we go to the courtyard. Jenny is doing laundry. Jamie is talking to her. They chat comparative child rearing. And Jenny says, quote, "You're an authority on raising bairns now." He says no, but he is an authority on being a 16-year-old boy on a farm, wanting adventure. And he urges her and Ian to give young Ian a taste of freedom while young Ian still thinks it's theirs to give. Now, that's also from the book, right?
I don't think he suggests it in the book. I think that they say it in the book.
In the show, it was effective, don't get me wrong. But in the show, he suggests it and she brings that line. She parrots that line back to everybody else later on. Ah, Jenny, nothing better to say. So she brings up the second wife. Here we go. Now, this is actually the first hint of the reasonable Jenny we once knew. Jamie talks about Claire and how he thought she was dead and all of this stuff. And she's like, okay, if you weren't going to tell me, why couldn't, or you weren't going to, you know, tell me more. She says, quote, "Since you believed her to be dead, why didn't you share your grief with me?" Unquote. I think that's reasonable. Jenny, I will say this for Jenny. The way she treats Claire is abominable. However, she is very protective of her brother. She has seen him go through hell and back.
And she's had to nurse him from almost dead several times.
Oh, no. Exactly. Absolutely. So she's the older. She took care of him. She helped raise him. So she is a mother, kind of a mother figure, but definitely obviously older sister. While we are hard on Jenny in the book and, of course, in the show, we also... I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I also recognize that she loves her brother like nothing else. At one point, all they had was each other. I mean, she has Ian, obviously, but she loves him like no one else. Whereas she does have Ian and their kids and, you know, family. At one time, that was all they Jamie had. So she has had to help him struggle back to life. Literally as he, you know, nursing him, and then emotionally as he was, you know, so depressed and so just out of it emotionally. So I understand why she's done this. She wanted him to get married again. She wanted him to have a life. It was out of concern and love for him. I don't think anyone can fault her for that. Summer can explain herself better than I can explain Summer. I think you can say that you can recognize all of the stuff that I just said and give Jenny plenty of credit for loving her brother, for caring for him and wanting the best for her. And understand her shock, being annoyed, and all the stuff. Understand her reaction. You can be the bitchiest itchy bait. You can do all the stuff or say all the things that Jenny said. The moment you ask your very own daughter to go grab this other woman and have her come, to me that, and I think Summer will agree, that's when it crossed the line. Having your own opinion and expressing yourself, and you and Claire need to work it out. You two are...
It's not her business. It is not Jenny's business. She had no need to get involved in that. Now, granted, should Jamie have said something? Yes. Yes. Should Jamie have said something to Claire sooner? Absolutely. I would never say he is faultless in this. However, the way the whole thing went down is solely on Jenny. And she was trying to drive her away. And in the book, it actually kind of worked. Because she was, and the thing that they left out from the book that she did is not only did she do all of this and want her to leave, she saddled her horse for her. Remember? I don't know. Maybe she didn't saddle the horse, but she saw her out and was like, yeah, this is for the best.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah,
you should probably go.
Yeah, totally.
Probably. It was like like I said. And because there was no malice toward her beforehand, like she wasn't, I wouldn't say in the book that she was overwhelmingly warm to her. But she wasn't as cold as she is in this episode, that it was more of a surprise that she did it in the book. You know what I mean? But it's, again, it's just none of her business.
Oh, heck yeah. I agree. Do we think that Jenny would then, if Jamie had shared his grief with her, do we think that Jenny would then not have wanted to see him remarried? No, I don't think so. I think she probably would have wanted the exact same thing to happen, him to be happy or at least attempt to be happy and what she thought he would be happy with. And as Jamie admits to Claire. He thought he wanted to be a husband, a father, a provider. And I do think that Jamie wants that. But he, at the time, he knew he would never see Claire again, or thought. And so he knew it would have to be someone else. And what he didn't know was that he was looking for not, I almost wrote a surrogate Claire. He's not going to get a surrogate Claire. There's no substitute for Claire. But because of all he has lost with Claire and Willie and just in his life several times over, there is not going to be a true substitute. But I think he was trying to, he did the best with what he could, with what he had. He tells his sister, basically, you know, it's, I wouldn't speak of it. So he's like, you basically didn't have a chance. I was not ready to speak about it. I wasn't going to. So that was never going to happen. She asks him again in a different way, or requests, quote, I need to know what happened. Now, he says that he expected to die at Culloden, and that while he went off to Culloden, because he expected to die, Claire was safe at an inn. And then after the battle, he had her with money. She was expected to go to the colonies. However, when he didn't die, and then he heard about the aftermath when the British went through and scoured the Highlands, killing many people, he thought surely she died. Right here is when we get our love theme. Jamie says that Claire also thought he died as well, and thus she left. She went to the colonies. Now, Jenny is smart. She says the Claire she knew would never have stopped looking for you. She got the last word there in that scene, and the scene changes. Here we go. Get ready, people. It's gonna get even tougher. Jamie and Claire are alone in their room for the night, chatting about plans for the future. Their next step. Jamie suggests building a cottage. I'm surmising they're on the ground somewhere. And Claire says that Jenny can't stand the sight of me. She wants to tell Jenny the truth. Jamie doesn't think Jenny will understand. And Claire's like, well, what about Myrta? Jamie says that was a chance we had to take. And Myrta is an entirely different animal. He was not a man of the world, but he had traveled. He had seen the world. So he had been exposed to many things. Jenny had never left the farm.
She has left Lallybroch and been to surrounding farms. So it's not like she's in her house and never leaving.
So Jamie is still having a hard time believing Claire is there, he says. He tells her about Duncan Kerr, his escape from Ardsmuir, searching for her, the Silkies Island, the treasure, and how he took one sapphire. I loved seeing this footage. Finally, we get to see the bit that kind of makes up that missing time at Ardsmuir. I think we knew it was coming, though, because it's part of that is in the opening.
And it's also in the teaser trailer.
Oh, yeah. So did you notice that the music as he's retelling what happened?
Right there. Any question... that you posed to me that begins with anything about did you notice the music? The answer is no.
That's not true. You have said that you heard the love theme once in a while.
It was Frank's theme after it was like drilled into me 3 weeks in a row. I was like, okay, I heard it that time.
Frank's gone, so that's done. The music that is playing as he's swimming out to the island is different. I don't have a perfect memory for every single thing Bear's ever done for this show. So it may be something, it may not be brand spanking new, but it's different. Now, just remember it, obviously right now I'm not going to hum it, so you're not going to hear it from me, but go back and watch that and just notice what that music right there is. When he gets to the island, I'm sorry, and I know it's a visual medium and they had to like zhuzh it up, but that castle ruin is so Hollywood. I mean, it was not that sexy in the book, was it? It was not a castle ruin.
I thought it was just like a pile of rocks on an island.
It was not a castle. I'm not complaining. It was gorgeous, but I was just like, oh, here we go. Okay. You know, stunning for people. So as he climbs over the wall, the love theme appears again. Or sounds again. So right after he opens the chest, the same music sounds as when he was swimming to the island. I almost said, to the island.
I mean, you kind of did, actually.
The second time I did.
No, the first time it was real close, too.
Are you serious? Oh, yeah. That's funny. You'll hear it. Okay, so he tells Claire that he returned to Arsmere. She's like, look, you have all these riches and you escaped from prison and you went back. How crazy are you? And he's like, I couldn't swim. I mean, I couldn't. It was a heavy chest. He's like, I couldn't have swum with it. I just, you know, he probably could have taken a few more, you know, pieces or whatever, but he couldn't have taken all that much, at least at that moment. And, but he said he returns because the prisoners needed him. He was their leader. She tells him that whenever she saw or heard birds singing, that she thought of him, that he was coming to...
That explains the bird in the window in Boston.
Exactly. Yep. Now they kiss. Just maybe they're getting a little close. They're building that bridge again. They're getting a little closer. He is finally getting ready to tell her about wife number two, but he still takes his sweet time. He mentions Ned Gowan and he talks about the law. Now Claire is surprised and delighted to hear that Ned is still alive. And Jamie's like, no, let's stay on track. Listen. And just after he says that, in burst two young girls, the youngest of whom says, Daddy! It's wee Joni and Marsali. Now, Summer, you say it how you're going to say it. This is one thing I will not change. It's Marsali.
Marsali. Well, they pronounced it in the show, Marsali. Anyway.
That's okay. I'm keeping my book thing.
Divergent from the book. I'm not unhappy that they didn't have them walking in with him going down on her. Because that would have been soups awkward.
After the little kids come in and Claire's like, the fuck? And we get Larry. Now, Summer and I said a little bit earlier, but this is where, I mean, immediately, her little voice, everything, I fell in love with wee Joni. I fell in love with her right here. I was like, this is the one she's the star of the show. She's this of this episode. This is the one I want. And Claire keeps saying, Daddy. She came over there in the corner. And Larry helps explain.
Good Lord, Leary's mouth, man.
Oh, I know. In front of the kids. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
The C word, the whore, the hoot, everything. So Jamie is like, enough. And he takes her out of the room. And Claire is in shock still, of course. And now she's alone. Jamie and wee Joni are chatting about that woman. He's so good with wee Joni. It's so good to see him with the young girl and a redhead at that. That was an on-purpose choice, 100%. We get a sense of what he may have been like with Brianna. And poor Joni, her world, this is the only dad she's ever known. And her world is crumbling. She says, what about Ma? This line is so sad. I'm glad they took the time to do it because it definitely humanizes, it shows that there was a need there, right? Because people hate Leary so much. The fact that there are children involved, you know, makes you, and that that they love their mom. So she has to be loving to someone. The way Jamie explained it to wee Joni, it's so sad. No, unintentionally, he's destroying, or I guess that was Jenny, but well, even if Jenny hadn't said anything, she would have found out eventually and they would have ended it. But unintentionally, Claire's returning is destroying the only family wee Joni has ever known.
And she is clearly the only one we care about in this episode. Poor wee Joni.
Completely. Seriously. Now, Claire, back in the room, begins to pack. She just grabs her stuff and starts to get ready to leave. Jamie is back in the room and he's trying to explain what actually happened. He says, we don't live together. The marriage was a mistake. And he tells her the girls aren't his children. And Claire is devastated. And she says, really? That little girl with the red hair? Okay. So she was totally seeing her dream. Not what she would have loved to have him with him and with Bree.
She was feeling betrayal on Bree's behalf.
Oh, a lot of levels. Not only was she feeling the thing that her dream that she didn't get to experience with Brianna or him, but it was lived out by another young redhead and with Leary to boot. So Jamie's like, there are a lot of redheaded men in Scotland, says Claire.
Yeah, but her initial thing is she tried to kill me. She tried to have me killed. And his response was, you told me to thank her.
I got a lot of words. And this has to do with the adaptation. Not the writer, the adaptation. Okay, Leary, he explains, was twice a widow with two kids when they wed. Claire's thing is Leary, of all people, who tried to have her killed. And as Summer said, Jamie says, you're the one who told me to be kind to the lass. Okay, Jamie, did you really just say that?
Everything he says makes it worse. Everything he says in this episode is a, well, you're the one who told me.
His marrying Leary only made sense when he didn't know she had tried to kill his wife, have his wife killed. I don't have anything more to say. I mean, kind of, we'll get there. But even given that she told him and given he married her, to say that, to throw that back at her, I'm sorry, this is not in character, in my humble opinion. It is not in character. Claire is also having a hard time digesting this. She's like, it's like he threw, or it's like he spit on her. He basically did. What the actual F? She told him to thank her, not to marry her. And then Claire tries to leave and says that he lied to her and she cannot take any more lies. And we're back to Willie. She's like, you told me about Willie. Why couldn't you have told me this? Summer, you and I talked about this, right? We understood. I can see both sides. Why telling her about Willie was like giving her something so she could be, you know, he was trusting her, etc. And not holding anything back. Like she wouldn't suspect something. If he's going to tell me this secret, surely there's nothing left, right? The fact that he mentions Willie makes this whole thing worse. At least if they had done the Leary thing exactly the same way as in the book and allowed Willie to be explained later, like it unfolds in the books, which is highly entertaining, by the way, in this scene, then even though Jamie's decision to wed Leary still doesn't make sense. Now, he's not stupid. Come on. He's a man. She's king of men, but he's not stupid. She couldn't throw back in his face, you told me about Willie. Why couldn't you trust me with this? Do you see what I mean?
I do. But then what's also not in character is then he keeps throwing it in her face that she left.
Oh, let's go there.
And I'm like, dude, you've already done this. You did this in the last episode. You're going to keep doing this every episode. Mm-hmm. You're going to blame her for
exactly
as a punishment for coming back.
He tells her because she's like, why couldn't you trust me with this? He answers it because I was a coward. I mean, OK, but a coward wouldn't have mentioned Willie. Period. OMG. Even though you left me, he says, I can't even. This is not Jamie Fraser. Liar, coward, maybe. But throwing this in her face? Or am I missing something, Summer? Did he ever throw this back in her face? Did he ever do that in the book?
No, not that I can recall.
This is like the second time it's happened now. Unbelievable and completely out of character for Jamie. Or at least, I guess not. Jamie of the show is different. So Claire's face here is heartbreaking. It's like he has with his words. Katrina's acting here. Katrina does so. They both do well. The acting is not to be. This is not a dig at any. Acting is fine. Acting is wonderful. She's so. It's gutting to watch. It's gutting to watch her face. She's so. It's like the person you trust or trusted most stabbing you with a knife. That's what her face said. She just found out about his second wife. And not only that, it was the bitch who tried to have me killed. And now you're blaming me for leaving you?
Yeah. And he's just deflecting. He's just deflecting the entire argument. Like, well, I'm going to redirect this and put it back on you.
This makes me furious and sad. Quote, left you? Left you? You forced me to go back. I would have died gladly at Culloden with you. Unquote. And then he says he can't blame her. Dude, make up your damn mind.
Right.
Claire is all kinds of confused here. She's like, are you blaming me or are you not? Are you blaming me because you're so pissed off at yourself? I mean, obviously that's the root of it. But yeah, you're right, Summer. You lash out when you get defensive when someone's close to the truth or when you feel like crap about yourself. When you know you've done wrong, until or unless you're ready to admit it, you're going to lash out. It's a protective mechanism. I get it. But he again acts the arse. quote. Even though he's saying it with feeling, the fact that these words come out of his mouth is a verbal slap to her. Quote, do you have any idea what it is to live 20 years and cut out your heart and exist in the bit that's left? Unquote. No, Jamie. She's got no clue. None at all. This scene is pretty good, though. The acting is great. And there you go. The emotion that it evokes, as you can see, I've like uttered an F-bomb or two, or I think just one, but a few things here. The emotion that Summer and I feel for this, we may or may not agree with certain, you know, adaptation choices, whatever. Again, like they ask us, they don't. But the fact that we're so riled up is exactly the point. It means that it's effective because we were also riled up in the book. And just like in the book, pretty much like in the book, they go at each other, start on the bed, end up on the floor.
They end up trying to do it.
And they go to the floor and then...
Coitus interruptus.
Aqua coitus interruptus.
Dude, and it's like, what was so funny is that in the book, because the first time they're trying to do it at Lallybroch, they get interrupted by the children showing up with Leary. And that happened. And then the next time they're trying to go at it, Jenny shows up and pours water on him. And I was like, does no one lock doors in this house?
Oh, yeah. That was funny. Claire with the water. Claire comes to her senses and grabs her stuff and walks out. Now, Summer, am I off my head? Was it that different from the book? The dialogue and choices for the storyline may be different than we've talked about. But as far as them being getting intimate, being interrupted, her learning the truth, them fighting, them having fight sex, or starting to have fight sex, and then Jenny coming in to douse water on them, and then her leaving, that's pretty much from the book.
It is, but the time of day is wrong.
Oh, it was daytime. It was morning. Yeah.
I think it was daytime. And so I think that her packing up, and in the book, as book readers know, she packs her stuff and gets on a horse and leaves. She's like, peace. So that's what happens in the book. So, and that all happens in the course of that one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no staying overnight. No.
There's no overnight. There's no one person in a guest room, one person someplace else. It's that all happens in that one day.
So commence Summer breaking up with Jenny in 3, 2, 1.
I hate you. I don't ever want to see you again.
Margaret tells Claire it was her that told Leary, and it was Jenny that told Margaret to do so. Well, I feel bad for Margaret. I don't think anyone blames Margaret because it was Jenny. You can't blame the poor child. And you did, through no fault of your own, you were the innocent participant, but you didn't really have a choice. You actually did cause a kebby lebby, dear Margaret. So they have it out, Jenny and Claire. Jenny is protective of Jamie, and that's fair. But she says things like, family writes letters. Now, poor Claire has a hard time. It can't be easy to figure out what to say and how far to go or not to go as far as a further explanation of where she was and what happened. So now, Summer, since she went so far to say that, okay, she went to the New World. Did she say Boston? I thought she said Boston.
I think she did.
So she went so far as to say, I had a husband and then he died. So she is sticking to the truth as closely as she can. Did it surprise you that she didn't mention Brianna?
She was very particular in her words. She said, I did not have any children with him.
With him, exactly.
So she did not lie, but she omitted the truth.
Jenny asks if Jamie knows about this other husband, and she says, yes, Jamie does know. She does say, however, when Jenny asks about any kids, she says, as Summer said, no, I never had children with him. Just like earlier in the season with Frank, when she says, I miss my husband, she carefully answers and avoids lying. She says when her husband died, she wanted to return to Jamie's grave and tell him she never forgot him. Jenny agrees that there's truth to what she says, but there's something else that she's not saying. She says they will not heal their relationship. So overnight, Jamie went to the stables, Claire to the guest room, and Ian gets after Jenny. She just can't let Jamie have happiness. And it's ironic because it's the one thing that she's praying for. So it's so oddball.
Well, but look at it though. Every conversation that Jenny's had, everything that Jenny has said always goes back to, why didn't you do this with me? Why did you do that to me? How come you didn't tell me? It was everything is me, 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 me. She's not really hurt on Jamie's behalf. She's hurt on her own behalf.
Because Claire didn't write letters. Exactly.
Because bitch couldn't pick up a phone.
Bitch, there was no phone. But yeah, exactly. Claire is, it's the next morning. So Claire's on her way out. Jamie stops her. They're in the courtyard. He wants to make things right. She's like, you remember the time when you said we could have secrets but no lies, blah, 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 blah. Just as they're talking and she's literally headed out, Leary appears with a pistol. And her plan is to shoot Claire. Jamie gets in front of her, of course, and Leary ends up, I think it was an accident because it went off like mid-sentence.
She was talking when, yeah.
Yeah. So she shoots him instead in the arm, just like the book. And Claire finally shows some spirit toward Leary and shoves her out of the way. I mean, that's been like three seasons coming. Come on.
No, she slapped her full up in the face in season one.
Oh, that's true. Sorry, you're right. So, of course, after he's injured, Claire doctors him, removes the pellets. Jenny is upset, of course, that her brother was injured. And finally, she's all ready to help Claire now that her brother is shot.
So, adaptation. This section worked for me.
The only, yes, I had, yeah.
And the reason I'll say that is because it saved time. I didn't want to watch her ride off with a horse and be in the woods and moaning and crying to herself. And then Ian having to find out to get her to come back and tell her what happened. And then you have to, when we have to come back and witness a retelling, it made much more sense and made it more succinct to have it happen in front of her so that she could get right to the doctoring.
Yes, I can go with all of that. Absolutely. This is part of the adaptation that makes sense to me for time and for, you know, ease of condensing. That, I think it was a perfect. As she's getting ready for the surgery, she applies him with alcohol. And I think it's cool that she brought those instruments. That's new. I think that was good. I mean, I don't have a problem with us finding out early that she brought instruments. That was a good addition. However, I'm still not happy about that damn penicillin.
Yeah, that made me mad.
I almost didn't care because I knew it was coming. Now, obviously, if you're a show watcher and you haven't read the books, the fact that you knew she had, maybe you forgot that she had it, but the fact that you may not have put two and two together or at least expected it to come out right now. And when she brought it out, you probably, maybe you went, oh, that's right. She brought penicillin. How convenient.
It was the wrong kind of penicillin. It's tablets. They were little tablets that dissolved in water and those would keep. Those would keep. I don't know the shelf life of her murky penicillin.
Okay, I'm not even going to criticize the type of penicillin. That's a whole other discussion. It's a legitimate discussion. I'm just thinking, like, what did you gain? Because in the end, what happened? The exact same thing as in the book. She brought out the penicillin. She syringed him in the ass. Nothing changed. So what do you gain by giving that away? It would have been such... You know what I'm saying? And I know I'm really trying not to harp on this. I'm just like, it was stupid. And not stupid, like I'm not saying people were stupid. It was unneeded because it would have been a surprise to use it no matter what. And you didn't change the way it was used. So I just don't see what you gained by, unless you needed a filler for an earlier episode. Anyway, that's going back. I'm trying not to go back, you people. You people? You people. People, I am trying not to go back. Thank you for staying with us. Okay. Young Ian admires her, quote, very fancy knives. That was funny. Now, the music here is not very loud, but as she's removing those pellets, it is dissonant. Claire saves the day again, and the dissonance goes away. Young Ian learns quickly. Give Claire a drink. Mm-hmm. And just as she starts to drink, the love thing comes up. Jamie regains consciousness. And he's making jokes. So this is a good sign. She's still like completely like complete deadpan. She's like, she's not humoring him. She gives him something to drink. And they go back to the subject of Leary.
She gives him water to drink. He asks for more whiskey. And she's like, no more whiskey. And she's like, you need something to drink. And he's like, I thought it was liquid. She's like, no, you get water or broth.
So what did he see in Leary? Claire says that she wants to hear the whole story.
This was a classic Jerry Maguire story. Fell in love with the kids.
It was. I think, other than Wee Joni, this I liked. This made me feel compassion for Leary. And of course, we fell in love with her, with Wee Joni again and her babies and everything. And compassion for Jenny, who has a brother who's like not himself, has not been himself in years, and who is lonely as heck. That And it's the same in the book. I think they did a very good job at that, showing that party. That adaptation, that was pretty much close to perfect, as close as you're going to get. Seeing him, you know, brighten up, seeing him dance, seeing him have a good time. That made Leary more, I don't want to say likable, but made me have more compassion for her character.
Well, they also took out the part that Jenny engineered the entire thing from the book. She invited her to the party. They had that thing. What was it? A Christmas party where they spin him around and walk him out the...
Oh, that. Yes. That
walk him out the door. The first person you see, and she did it on purpose. She set the whole thing up and made sure it was a forced thing.
So I'm wrong in that it wasn't a direct adaptation, but the party existed in the book. And I don't know, did he dance with the kids in the book?
No, I don't believe that the children were at the party.
Okay, so it was definitely an adaptation. It was different from the book, but there was a party in the book, and he did see Leary at the party in the book. So the way it came about may be different, and the fact that the inclusion of the kids may be different. But to me, again, that it's much more human. It probably is better, especially visually. It makes her much more, that's the word, sympathetic. It makes her much more sympathetic when you can see her babies there and he's happy and you see Jenny. It's just, that to me was like the feel good moment of the episode. It made me happy and sad all at the same time. So she's finally giving Jamie a chance to explain himself. After Hellwater, he says it was all different. He came back to Lallybroch. Jenny's kids did not recognize him, and he felt like he was a ghost. He was lonely, and at the first Hogmanay at Lallybroch, he dances with two lasses. He's carried away with the season, the memories of his family. And Summer, again, I'm going to say, wee Joni is the cutest ever, ever,
seriously,
ever.
I want to adopt ever. Her.
That's what I said. I didn't write it down, but I want to. The music of Bears right here. The music as they're dancing is beautiful. It's music of home. Now, Summer, do you know if do you remember hearing or reading about a Lallybroch theme?
No.
I don't know that there was one. There may have been music he used at Lallybroch, and this may be it. I don't recognize it, but it was gorgeous. It was so beautiful and sweet and melancholy at the same time. And so sweet. Did you catch what wee Joni said to him?
When
they were dancing.
No, clearly I didn't.
She says, "You're a bonny dancer." Then he finds out who the mother is. It's Mistress McKimmy, which is, of course, Leary. So Jenny saw this and urged him to make the match. He wanted so badly to be a father and a husband. He didn't get to care for Willie or Brianna. And he felt that if he could be that, he might get something of those experiences. He really likes the two girls. Claire is very understanding. Again, this humanizes Leary, but he says it didn't go well. He says Leary at times wouldn't speak with him. They fought. He tries to be gentle. And of course, by that, he means during their bow, chicka, bow, bow times. Maybe one of her husbands had hurt her. He believes someone must have hurt her because she was not, it was hard for her to relax. She was very afraid in the bedroom. And so he left. He didn't want to be with someone who was afraid of him, so he left. And that's when he went to Edinburgh. Now, at about this time, Claire is either touching him or feeling him and recognizes that he's feverish. She breaks out the penicillin, but I'm not surprised, and I almost don't even care. That's so awful to say. I already talked about it. But if you adapt something, you adapt something, right? If you make a change, you make a change. Whether we enjoy it or not, you know, we're going to go along for the ride. This was not a change. I think that's why it's so like a needle under my skin, because I should have seen that and went, oh my God, it's the penicillin. Instead, I was like, oh, and okay, yeah, there she goes. You know what I mean? Sorry. Okay. So soon he'll be all better. Claire goes to Jenny to have a heart to heart. Jenny, this is cool, straight from the books. Love hearing this. Jenny had a vision of Claire at Jamie and Leary's wedding, standing between them. Now, if Casey haven't gotten it by now, this may be the first time that we hear anything about it, but Jenny has the second sight, right, Sam?
No, I don't think that she has the second sight. It's not something that happens
all the time.
A lot. Yeah, it's not like They mention that they think that she's a little bit of a witch. That she is, you know, because when she was telling tales or stories around the fireplace and, you know, it just seemed like she was weaving spells. I think there was mention of that. I think that everyone's kind of suspected that she's capable of it.
Mm.
But they've never, I don't think that it's, at least in the adaptation, I don't think it's been touched on.
At one time, she says, it was enough that Jamie chose Claire and she would believe him. That Claire knew things. And she did. She expresses this. And then Claire reads between the lines and says, and that's not enough anymore. Jenny wants to believe, to accept her, I think. But it's a lot to accept that she's back. Again, her world is rocked. Jenny is mourning. Quote, you were a sister to me, unquote. Claire says, I loved you too, Jenny. I still do. I'm only asking for a second chance. And Jenny doesn't answer, that we see. Back in the house, Claire is in the corridor and sees Ned Gowan. He came to speak to Jamie about legal matters. And as far as how he looked, he says his secret is that he never got married, which is so ironic given this episode.
Right?
Jamie's marriage to Leary is indeed invalid. She's made a complaint against him, but it's not going to go very far because she's actually the one that shot him. And if they took it to court and it was proven that she shot him or owned a gun, she could be shipped to the colonies. Claire's a fan. She's like, I hear Virginia is pretty nice this time of year. But of course, they wouldn't turn her in, if only for the Baron's sake. Leary, we find out, wants alimony, £20 and then £10 per year for the girls until they're wed, or to keep the household for the girls until they're wed. Where to get the money? There's a place I know, a box with ancient coins, Jamie says. Funny how he doesn't mention the gems. Did you catch that?
No, but the gems are not of much use to them. Though, to be honest, neither are the coins. But they...
You have to sell either of them.
I know, but in the book, they've been dipping into this...
Yes.
...intermittently over the years for things for the farm.
And the reason I think they had... It just hit me. The reason I think they couldn't do that, or they didn't do that, is because they did not include the gypsy post when he was at Hellwater.
Yeah. Nope, that's
so true. There was no way to get them info so that they could be doing it. Now, they could have been doing it while he was in Edinburgh, for however long that was. But it was, yeah, no. So it made sense, since you have to sell a coin to get money and you'd have to sell a gem to get money, it didn't make sense to me that he didn't mention the gems. However, unless either it just fluke, which is weird, unless it was to protect the fact that there were gems in there, or not that he didn't trust his family, but he just didn't want to like let that be known, I guess, outside of him and Claire, because gems are the one thing that they can use or Claire needs in case there's a storm comes to town and she, God forbid, has to go back to the future. So, but we don't even know if Jamie knows that, right? Because she only knew it pretty much for sure, once she went back and his ring was gone, his ruby was destroyed. She had two incidents that she could then have. That's pretty good proof. And then as she prepped to come through the third time, you know, Brianna gave her the gift of her, of a locket or a necklace with a stone. So she knows, and it's possible that she told him off camera. Who knows? I don't think he's thinking that far ahead. I just found it interesting that Claire needs gems, or time travelers need or can use gems to help protect themselves when going through the stones, that he specifically does not mention any gems. I just thought that was interesting.
I don't know that he knows that.
That's what I'm saying. He may not know, but I thought it was, if he doesn't know, I thought it was odd that he didn't mention it. If it was money that he could use, I'd understand not mentioning it, because gems won't get you anywhere as quickly as money will. But if you have to sell those coins, then yeah, it doesn't matter. Why not, you know, don't
sell them all.
Can't be choosers. Just do, get them all, right. Get it all, or mention it all. He can't swim because of his injured arm. So in comes young Ian to the rescue. He volunteers to swim. The plan that Jamie has is to get some coins from this chest, take the coins to France and sell them to Jared and get money, and then use that money to help pay off Leary. He wants to take young Ian to France, and not only to, you know, get out and to see the world. And he says it's better France than war. And Jenny says, yes, he can go. This is so funny. Jamie says, quote, you can trust us.
Huh.
Them's good final words, Jamie.
He's going to be eating those pretty soon.
Oh, gosh. Oh, it gets better. So the next scene, Jamie and Claire are on a cliff overlooking the ocean as young Ian is swimming out to Seals Island. Jamie says, quote, describing the journey to Claire or the swim to Claire, quote, it's the current that's the worst part of it. You must surrender to it. As you come nearer the island, you must break free of it or be carried away to the new world, unquote. Which is so ironic.
I know that you were initially upset about the adaptation version of the island with the castle on it and how Hollywood you thought that was.
Not upset. I just thought that's okay. That's dramatic.
When I originally envisioned this island, I always thought that it was kind of a barren little place. I didn't imagine how tall it was, how much area it was. It didn't seem like a giant island. It seemed kind of like an outcropping of rocks in the middle of...
Yeah, because it's covered in seals, which we didn't see one of.
Right. Right. So if that's the case, we saw no silkies. You're right. If that's the case, they would have had a very easy time of seeing that boat as it approached the island, no matter what direction it came from. And as the boat cleared the backside of the island, I went, oh, okay, makes sense now. I'm glad I was, because I was wondering how were they going to be surprised by a giant boat?
Yeah, I can
and
go
then
with that.
Having the island be in between their view and the boat, I was like, okay, I get it. That makes sense. It works for me. So I wasn't too mad at the Hollywood adaptation adding the castle.
I'm not mad at it. I just thought, oh, Lord. But now that you mention the boat thing, I can say, oh, there's actually a visual need for it. I think that's, to me, that's smart. That makes more sense. We see young Ian, through Jamie's telescope, arrive on the island. Now, did you note the music?
No, I didn't.
That we hear as as they watch young Ian swim? It's the same sound we heard as Jamie was swimming to the island earlier. Then that gives way to the love theme in strings as they're waiting for
progress.
As
they're arguing yet again.
They've barely been alone. She can barely meet his eyes. I told you there was a lot of lack of eye contact or eye avoidance here. She's afraid this whole thing was a mistake. Do they even belong together anymore? She's thinking of what she left in Boston. And her best line is, quote, I didn't hate Boston.
Right, well.
Oh gosh, that was funny. And Jamie says, being a printer was not compared to being your husband. Their struggle is realistic as far as relationships go. Not the time travel part of it, but the fact that if you've been away from each other and then you're coming back together, it's not going to be like a puzzle piece fitting perfectly together. This, we may not agree with some of the things they've done like in 307 or whatever, or even here. I think this, like you said, your text to me was yes and no. It was much more yes than no for this episode for me. Overall, though, regardless of like certain words that were used or text that was used or the penicillin that was already, you know, spoiled early on, other than those little tiny nitpicky things, the fact that this episode in a different way made us so upset or so uncomfortable to me is an attribute to the power that it had and how close it was to the book. They may have made some changes or spoiled some stuff earlier, but the fact that you and I, that we could sense the tension and felt the tension and were so uncomfortable, to me is a good thing compared with the discomfort the viewers felt last week. That's a different discomfort. Yeah, it was reflective of the character's discomfort, but it was for a different reason, I think. So I'm not going to go back. I'm just saying you can be uncomfortable with an episode and love the episode because the what you're feeling is exactly what was meant to be felt through the screen. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
He says, you belong with me. We're mated for life, Sasnak. And we get the line that people said that they missed before. Will you risk the man I am for the one you once knew? And then she sees a tall ship over his shoulder. What the F? With his ever so handy telescope, he sees a wee boat rowing to the island. He sees Ian making his way down with the box. Or was it just the coins? It was a box, right? He had it in his hand.
He had the whole box. Okay. Yeah.
Some men confront him. There's a little scuffle. We really don't see much, but it was men came up and there was, I think, a scuffle. Jamie and Claire are running down the cliff mountain or mount, whatever it is, in slow-mo.
Slow motion.
And the camera shows the men. I did not catch it the first two times, but the third time I did. They like dump his body over the side of the boat. I mean, you could tell they were like dumping something and it wasn't.
You saw his feet.
They had.
His feet, yeah, hanging exactly. Over the boat.
And Summer and I haven't been as happy or as excited about this show since Claire stepped into the puddle. The music here is mysterious. There's a beat and we get drums. They are running, as I said, slow-mo, like Claire in the opening. It's too late. The tall ship unfurls its sails and they're off. There's a voyage to come. I am so excited, you don't even know.
So I feel like Jamie in this episode vacillates between...
Pissy petty?
Well, petty, it's your fault. I'm going to be defensive about this. To then like having the most beautifully written, take away all of my other reason, how could I possibly be mad at you, lines. Mm-hmm. Like his, you know, printing was not next to being your husband. I was like, oh... Like, seriously, between that, it's like it doesn't make up for, you know, the most of the show where he was and the episode before when he was blaming her for leaving multiple times irrationally, even though he admits he's being irrational at the time. But I don't know. I'm hoping we get less of them blaming each other from here on out, you know. So I'm excited to see what happens next week.
That's what I thought. Aren't you? I haven't been this excited for the show in all 3 weeks. Like it's that shows you how often I'm so freaking excited for the show. Don't get me wrong. I always love new episodes. That's never going to change. But after the high that was 306, 307 was like, and then 308 was like, okay, we're back. There may have been some little issues, but the fact that we were so passionate about Jenny, the fact that we were so passionate about this Leary thing and the way they did it, again, those changes, I agree with you. I think the changes worked. And the fact that we were so pissy, I don't think we're pissy, the fact that we're so passionate about whatever we're expressing ourselves in this, for this episode, means that they were successful. And that is awesome. And the fact that, perfect cliffhanger, or I guess that's a cliffhanger, perfect thing, perfect setup for, honestly, the rest of the show. Because what we can say without, and it's not a spoiler, is that you heard me quote what Jamie said, we'll be careful, we'll take good care of him. Mm-hmm. And then he loses him. So what happens to young Ian? Where's that ship going? We will find out in the rest of the season.
So that is the episode discussion for First Wife. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 309 entitled The Doldrum.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.